with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back. It is our number two of the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We had a fun first hour. Thank you to Brian Broaddus, radio host at 105.3 The Fan in Dallas, former NFL scout. He joined us in the last segment. If you missed it, make sure you check it out in podcast form. Just search the Lombardi Line wherever you get your podcast. We have a fun second hour on deck for you guys as well. We'll talk some NFL, some NBA with our VSiN senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel. He'll join us 30 minutes from now. And Michael, let's give our thoughts here on the association real quick. Here we have a game three tonight, and it's pretty much as must-win game as you'll find for the Minnesota Timberwolves, facing an 0-2 deficit, dropping games one and two at home. Now heading to game three for Dallas, they are catching 2.5 points. So market interest is here on the Timberwolves, also on the under as well. We've opened 209, now 207.5. Do you think that the market's getting a little overzealous with this desperation spot with the T-Wolves, because so far Dallas has looked like the better team through two games?
No question, Dallas has looked like the better team, and they have won the games and one played well down the stretch. And Minnesota, for all their great defensive acumen during the season, they haven't been able to defend Dallas, and especially with their defense in terms of how they're handling the lob, they're backing off and all that. So, but I think this line's reflective of the fact that this team, Minnesota, has won three games in a very hostile environment in Mile High, Denver. Because if you can win three games there, you can win anywhere. And so yeah. I don't think this is one of those situations where it's over. I think the team believes, look, we've won in Denver. We won a game seven in Denver. That's a lot of arsenal in your tool belt that you can kind of cling to. And they have to play better. And they've got to starts with their drop defense. They've got to be able to not give up 20 points in the paint. I think one of the things when you watch the game, when Minnesota can't score in the paint, they're not the same team. And when Minnesota gives up points in the paint, they're not the same team. And I think this game's both games where you could easily, if you're Jason Kidd, say Dallas didn't play great, but yet won, they're going to have to play well today to win.
Yeah, you mentioned those points in the paint. In game two, Daniel Gafford, 8 of 10 from the field, 16 points. And then Derek Lively off the bench, 6 for 6 from the field, 14 points. So, like, they were catching those lobs. They were getting those dump passes off in the dunker spot. I mean, the bigs were eating for the Dallas Mavericks, and you wouldn't expect that against a team that is anchored by the Defensive Player of the Year in Rudy Gobert. We know that Karl Anthony Towns has stepped up his play defensively in the postseason, as has Naz Reid. But I think the T-Wolves, they need more from Edwards and Towns. Like, those guys, they're shooting 30% from the field combined. Like, you're not going to score enough points or win these games against a really high-powered offense like Dallas if you're getting that sort of production from two of your better scores. I mean, these are your two best scores on the team, Edwards and Towns, and they haven't really been much of a factor through those two games. I expect this to be one of those empty the clip setter situations for Anthony Edwards. Like, if points prop, I believe it's 25.5. I would lean towards the over, because this being a do or die spot down 0-2 on the road, I think you're going to see him take quite a bit of shots. And as long as they fall, I think you have a good chance of getting there over 25.5 points.
Well, I mean, look, they're 9 for 33 from the floor, both Towns and Edwards in the last game. And they're 3 for 12 from the three-point line. If Naz Reid doesn't make 7 out of 9 from the three-point line, you know, where are the Timberwolves? I mean, think about it. They shot 41% from the floor. They shot 38.7% from threes, but most of that came from Naz Reid's ability. No one else made any more than three threes in the game. So I think, to me, yeah, you're right. I think Towns being 1 for 5 from three-point line, we know he's too good of a shooter to have that continue. But I think the other areas where, you know, you look at it, they're getting beat off the boards. I mean, 44 rebounds. They had 11 offensive rebounds to 40 for the Timberwolves. And I think ultimately that they've got to play bigger than they are. I mean, Towns is too big to not play big. Gobert, we got great size in there. And look, McDaniels was great in game one, but last game he played 36 minutes. He's 1 for 6 from the field, 0 for 3 from three-pointers. And so it's been a struggle. I mean, got to credit Dallas's defense in this whole game. I mean, Dallas's defense has been really good. I mean, they hold them. Dallas, in the second half, Dallas scores 61 points, Femi, and they only give up 48. I mean, they 22 points in the fourth quarter. It's pretty damn good, you know? And so I think to me, Dallas is kind of gets into a rhythm and they feel it and they get going. And, you know, I think Luka has been sensational and so is Kyrie. And look, we could say the same thing about Kyrie in last game. He did not shoot well until the fourth quarter.
Yeah, the fourth quarter, he hit those big threes, though. He was really – that's when he started to find that three-point shot, ended up with 20 points. But there were impactful points, especially with 13 of them coming in the final period. Last thing on Anthony Edwards here. The last three games, Michael, has been the worst field goal percentage over any three-game span in the playoffs over the last three seasons for players that are shooting 50-plus attempts. Like he's number one at 29% over the last three games. That includes Game 7, the victory in Denver. The guy that's right after him is the beloved Dylan Brooks at 30% in 2022 when he went 15 of 50 over a three-game stretch. But yeah, Edwards, it's not just this series, but even in the last series in Game 7, you could even point to Game 5, Game 3. I don't know if he's hit a wall, but
he's having to work.
Yeah.
He's having to work. I mean, look, you know, if Tom Thibodeau was coaching the Timberwolves, they'd be complaining about how many minutes he was playing, right? I mean, they're not. Nobody complains about it, but he plays 40 minutes. He's tired, and he's got to play. Look, he's got to play on both ends of the court, right? Yeah. Nobody says anything about Finch's substitution patterns, but, you know, of course, if Thibodeau was coaching him, oh, my God, he's wearing him out. You know, you got to stop it. You know, you got to stop it. You can't play these guys that many minutes, but I think he's just tired. I think his legs are tired. You could see it. We've been talking. It's noticeably tired. You know, it's not Joel Embiid tired in the first quarter. It's just he's tired from both ends. I mean, Embiid doesn't even run from one end to the other, whereas this kid is trying to run. But you can watch the games and see that there's not a lot of juice left in him. I mean, he's kind of tired. I really think that. So I think that's affecting his shooting. And then if they don't have him, and then Towns played 26 minutes the other night, and it wasn't because of free throw foul trouble.
Nope.
He played 26 minutes. Not Reed played 32.
Yeah.
Gobert played 38. So they got basically what they were saying was we don't have a good matchup for Towns out there on the court because it gets into a problem defensively. You know, who's going to handle that with the way they handle their off coverage? I said this before the series started. Dallas was confident. They have two of the best players in the league. Their defense is really good, and people are undervaluing them because they're not paying attention to what's happened when they traded for Gafford and when they got P.J. Washington. And look, let's face it, P.J. Washington hasn't been shooting the ball as well as he did in the other series.
No, yeah, he's kind of come back down to earth, but they've still been able to find success offensively with Luka and then the bigs were Lively and Gafford, those guys shooting high percentage at a very, very high clip here. We got a few minutes left here, Michael. I want to get in your writing spotlight for the NFL here because you discussed the interim coach dilemma, and that pertains to the Las Vegas Raiders. Antonio Pierce, I should say, rather, is now the permanent head coach for the Las Vegas Raiders. Why did you find this an interesting topic, and what is so difficult about going from interim to permanent head coach and finding success? Because it's something that never happens in the NFL, pretty much.
Well, you know, when I was in Cleveland and Marty Schottenheimer was the head coach, we couldn't get over the hump, and Modell fired Schottenheimer for that. And Marty's program was buttoned up. It was a really good program, and the player held players accountable. And we went in a direction and hired Bud Carson, whose defensive acumen was top-notch in the league, and he defended the cover two scheme and all that. But Bud wasn't a detailed guy. He wasn't a disciplined guy. He was always an assistant coach at heart that got promoted to become a head coach. And we had a little bit of a run, went to a conference championship game, but then the program fell flat. It was a little bit like, and so when you go from one program to another, there's always going to be an uptick. But then the next season comes in, there's a downtick, and I knew that. And so when you go research the 46 interim coaches in the National Football League that had taken over, 12 got extensions. And there's only two, Jason Garrett, the clapper in Dallas, and Doug Marrone in Jacksonville. And even those flickered out. But why is that? Because when you're the interim without an extension, without a guarantee you're coming back, when Marv Levy comes into Buffalo as the interim, he wasn't interim. He was the head coach. He was appointed at midseason, but he was the head coach. There was no Rooney Rule at that time. There was no procedures to go through. There was no process. Same thing when Schottenheimer took over for Sam Ratigliano in 84. There was none of that. So he became the head coach with an extension so he could handle the players the way he wanted from the start. But when you have to kind of massage your way through this to get the players on your side, relax the rules, don't hold anybody really accountable, keep everything calm, the next year is when the telltale happens. And I think that's going to be something to look forward to the Raiders, especially considering that we know the Raiders' lack of play at quarterback is going to affect them. It affected them last year. And Gardner Minshew, he's a middle reliever. He's going to be good for four or five games, not 17.
Yeah.
And so I think that's really the issue. I'm wondering. And then they add Brock Bowers in the draft. Well, good player, but how does that help? And then when I added also, it's not all on Pierce here too, because when you look at the history of this drafting going back, for a while, it's a disaster. It's not bad. It's a disaster. You know, they had four picks picked in the top 12 players in the draft. One of them was only on the team. I mean, they can't get production. They had three first round picks 1 year. And without Jacobs now, he's gone. I mean, think about it. Cleveland Farrell, Jonathan Abraham, and Josh Jacobs, and none of them are on the team. And then they had two the next year because of the trades, and neither of them are on the team.
Yeah, I mean, that should be the foundation of a really good team, and they blew all of those picks, which is, it's hard to do, but that's something that was done, and it's put the Raiders in a tough spot through now multiple coaching staff. Now we'll see what Antonio Pierce can do in 2024, where the win total's at 6.5, and you look at the quarterback room and you wonder, yeah, that checks out. Maybe it should be even lower based on the play that they'll get at that position. All right, on the other side, we'll ask the question, believe the hype? We talk some contenders next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What if I told you can up your betting game for less than 50 cents a day? Is that something you might be interested in? Well, listen up. Go to VSiN.com/subscribe, and when you go there, make sure you use promo code Lombardi, because we're giving you a discount. Normally $240, now just $199, and it's kicked in with 2 months free. But here's the catch. You gotta do it before May 31st. So you got 5 days. I know it's a holiday weekend, but you have days after the holiday weekend. As long as you get in before May 31st, you'll get the daily best bets, the premium analysis, the 24/7 video content, the exclusive betting systems and splits. VSiN.com/subscribe, but once again, must use promo code Lombardi. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi out in the great state of New Jersey. We appreciate everyone joining us here on this Memorial Day weekend. Hopefully everyone's having a happy and safe Memorial Day weekend as we remember those who made the ultimate sacrifice for us to have our freedoms that we have today. Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, will be joining us 15 minutes from now to break down these NBA playoffs. JVT has a handful of plays for tonight's game. Also has an Eastern Conference Finals MVP play as it pertains to the Celtics and Pacers series. Boston in control there with a 3-0 series lead. But Michael, let's get into believe the hype. Five contenders in the National Football League. And are we buying in on these contenders throughout the season and especially in the first 5 weeks? We'll start with the Cincinnati Bengals. They get their quarterback back, Joe Burrow, happy and healthy. He's got no restrictions. There's no pitch count at OTAs. Are you believing the hype on the Cincinnati Bengals win total 10.5?
Yeah, I am. I'm concerned. I read today where Trent Brown hasn't been in OTAs, which is always a concern. Trent Brown is a really talented offensive lineman with not a lot of love for the game of football, nor conditioning. And if you're counting on him to be your starting right tackle, which I don't think the Bengals are, they drafted Mims in the first round, so obviously they've got some protection. But look, Burrow, if he's healthy and everybody says he's 100%, this is a good team. And defensively, with adding Geno Stone, bringing Von Bell back, I am believing the hype. And I mean, they start out with New England. I think it'll be everybody's survivor pick to start the season there. Yeah. You know, they've got to go to Kansas City, but then they come back and play Washington and Carolina and Baltimore at home. So there's a good chance, you know, for three wins, you're looking at a situation where, you know, you're 3-2. What cannot happen is to Cincinnati, and I think this is really on Zach Taylor more than anyone, they can't get off to a slow start. Because, you know, when you look at the end of the year, you know, they got Pittsburgh at Dallas, at Tennessee, Cleveland, Denver at home, and then at Pittsburgh. So, you know, there's no walks in the park for this team, even though they're going to be playing a fourth place schedule.
Yeah, that's the thing with the Cincinnati Bengals. They're notoriously slow starters. Can this year be different, or is this just how Zach Taylor runs his ship and they're going to make sure that they're ascending in November and December? Because the first five market, which you can bet over at DraftKings, how many wins a team will have in its first five games. For Cincinnati, three wins is the favorite outcome at plus 170. Like you said, they have a couple tough games at Kansas City. They have Baltimore at home as well. Can they get to a better start than 3-2? Could they ever be 4-1, given the fact that in the past we've seen them kind of start the season out pretty slowly?
Well, I think he wants to start slower in the sense, I'm not saying he wants to lose games, but I don't think he wants to overwork his team. But He's got a couple factors he's got to handle. He's got to solve his right tackle position, right? Trent Brown's not there. That's going to be critical. He's got to incorporate a new running back in Zach Moss. But the one saving grace has always been their defense. And last year, because of their inability to have a play caller at safety, you know, that really affected them. They're going to move Dak Hill, who was playing back there, out the corner, probably a better position for him. They didn't communicate well last year. Now, look, this team defensively at the corner position is important. Now, they've got two second-round picks really involved in DJ Turner and Cam Taylor-Britt because they've got to cover better. And I think if they get better communication from their safeties, this defense will play better with Lou Amoromo. But I think a lot of it is starting and how you practice. And Femi, I think Zach Taylor wants to start slower. He doesn't want to injure anybody. He's one of those guys from the West Coast that has the belief that, you know, we're going to go and we're more concerned about December than we are September. Mm-hmm. And that's proven to be effective for him. But in the North this year, I'm not sure that'll hold up.
Yeah, you play that game and all of a sudden you're now behind the eight ball. And it kind of happened last year. They started slow. Then it's like, well, Burrow's back. He's healthy. They beat the Niners. And then like a couple weeks later, Burrow gets hurt and it's season over. You have no wiggle room to try to make the playoffs, even though they got some pretty good games out of Jake Browning in the second half of the season. Let's get to their division rivals, the Baltimore Ravens. Their win total set at 11.5. They lose defensive coordinator Mike McDonald to the Seattle Seahawks. He's now the head coach. Stepping in, Zach Orr as the new DC. Their first five games, a little difficult, at Kansas City, at Dallas, at Cincinnati within the first 5 weeks. Do you believe the hype on the Ravens, and can they get out to a fast start, which they typically do under John Harbaugh?
Well, they practice differently than a lot of teams, and they're more physical, and their program is built to start faster. Look, you know, defensively, it's going to be a concern. Zach Orr's only been a defense coordinator for 3 years. You know, they let Anthony Weaver go down to Miami to become a coordinator. They let Denard Walker leave to become a coordinator at Tennessee. So, you know, they had coaches on their staff they could have promoted. They chose to promote Zach Orr, who's only been there 3 years, well-liked within the organization. But I think McDonald was really effective at utilizing the talent and making the game adjustments. I think what we learned last year from Todd Monken as the offensive coordinator of the Ravens is sometimes it's a little bit challenging when you go from college to pro. I mean, that panic, the job that happened at the playoff game when they lose 17-10, Buffalo ran the ball for 182 yards the week before. And for some reason, Baltimore got behind in the game. And after running two power plays, quarterback power and regular power, they stopped running the football. Now, they signed Henry, and they're determined to get Henry 300 carries. They'll be a pistol more team than they would be a shotgun team. I'm hoping they put him under center. Maybe the pistol will help them. But they've got to be able to run the football and keep that defense off the field. It's remarkable last season. This is one of the most remarkable things that you can really study. They were 32nd in facing passing attempts last year, even though they had a plus 42 in first half point differential. So what does that all mean? Well, they're playing from in front, yet teams are still not trying to overly throw the football against them because they're worried about protection. They're worried about the McDonald blitzes and where they're coming from and can they handle them. And I think that might change if Orr doesn't respond to this. This is very difficult to go into the season with really inexperienced coordinators, including Monken, who last year we saw, for all his experience in college, wasn't the same guy on the biggest stage.
And you talk about inexperience at defensive coordinators while you're going up against some pretty good offenses and some pretty good quarterbacks. I mean, you start the season off with the best quarterback in the league in Mahomes. Week three, you're at Dallas against Dak Prescott and the Cowboys, and that offense usually is high-flying indoors in Dallas. And then it's Josh Allen and the Bills, and then Joe Burrow and the Bengals. there's not a whole lot of time to kind of work through the kinks here. You can find yourself really up against it if you're not ready to roll from jump street if you're the Baltimore Ravens. The team that they'll be playing in week four, the Buffalo Bills, also a win total of 10.5. This one juiced toward the under, though, so a little bit of market pessimism about the Buffalo Bills and the changes they've made specifically in the wide receiver room. Are you buying the hype on the Bills, and what do you think of their start to the season first five games?
Well, I am buying the hype on Buffalo because I'm buying Josh Allen. You know, I'm buying Josh Allen. They get a break Monday night. They get a break on a Thursday, short week. They know Miami. Miami, they understand how to play them. We don't have to play them in the heat and humidity. But when you look at what they have, they open up at home against Arizona, have to travel on a short week for the first Thursday night game. Al, we'll get to see Al. Probably not wearing a tie because it'll be too hot for him.
Yes, too warm.
But then a little too warm for the tie. But anyway, we'll come back with Jacksonville, Baltimore, and Houston. I mean, it's a tough schedule. I think a lot of the kinks have to get worked out defensively. You know, we know Sean McDermott's still going to call the defense. We know Sean McDermott's still responsible for the defense. I think they're going to be a 12 personnel team with Kincaid in the slot. You know, they ran the ball effectively. Look, this is the team. If you rank teams after last year, the team that gave Kansas City the most trouble in any game was you go back and watch that Buffalo tape against Kansas City. Buffalo ran the ball for 182. They threw it for 182. Diggs has the huge drop. You know, this defense is going to be different because Hyde and Poyer, the two guys who are calling the defense, aren't there. And I think that does affect them, and I think that's why there's a little bit of an under. I expect this team to be improved at the second half, and they better be. After their Week 11 game, when they play the Chiefs at home, they end the year with San Francisco, at the Rams, at the Lions, home for New England, home for the Jets, and then they have to go back to New England. So they get a break in two of the last three games or against New England, which should help them, and then they have the Jets at home.
Yeah, but they have that West Coast trip after the Rams. That's a tough one. And then you followed it up going to the Detroit Lions. They're a physical football team before you finish the season out with those division games. It does feel like to me that we're getting a little bit of a discount on a quarterback of Josh Allen's caliber, but we got to see this wide receiver room kind of shake out. And if this 12 personnel thing is really, are they really committed to being a physical, run the football team? Because I think if they do that, then we can find some success from Buffalo. But I think we could see a big year for James Cook if that offensive line can get going. The running back, he looked like one of the better running backs in the league toward the end of last season. Maybe we'll get something big, and it'll be a different Buffalo team than what we're grown accustomed to seeing through the passing game. All right, we'll get to the Super Bowl participants to wrap the show up in 30 minutes. But on the other side, Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst, breaking down the playoffs here next on the Lombardi Line.
DraftKings.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Timmy Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you haven't already, make sure you check out all the expert NBA playoff articles that we have posted at VSiN.com. Our VSiN senior NBA analyst, Jonathan Von Tobel, Zach Cohen, all those guys have done a great job all throughout the postseason getting you ready to bet the NBA playoffs. So check it out today on the newly revamped VSiN.com. Log in to your browser of choice. Do it right now. Or maybe after the show. Welcome back. This is the Lombardi Line here on the DraftKings Network. Michael Lombardi out in New Jersey. Femi Abebefe hanging out here in downtown Las Vegas. And joining us now on the Progressive Guest Line, it is the one and only Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, also co-host of VSiN Primetime. We should check out weekdays, 6 to 9 Eastern Time, right here on VSiN. JVT, before we get into tonight's game, I know you have a plethora of plays between the T-Wolves and the Nuggets. What about what we saw last night where the Indiana Pacers, we were making the argument in hour number one that you could say that they could be up 2-1 in this series. They now find themselves down 0-3 after an 18-point collapse yesterday to the Boston Celtics.
Look, the Celtics obviously came into this with a talent discrepancy that worked in their favor. And then when you lose Tyrese Halliburton, you have a good effort in the first half into the third quarter, and then it kind of wears out from there, and you see the talent really shine through in the second half. So like you said, Femi, this is why, and I brought this up after game one, this is why you can't lose those games, right? Because even in the worst case scenario, you hold on, you're only down 2-1. You're not down 3-0, and you got a game four to potentially even things back up to head back to Boston. I think this is why that loss in game one really looms large for this team, because you do see that they are very talented. They are 2-1 against the spread in this series. And in the one game they failed to cover, Rick Carlisle quit with like 2 minutes into the fourth quarter, right? Like they were all done. So I think it's a tough series loss. And I think right now, from an emotional standpoint, it's hard to really bank on this team to get up off the mat. But they've done it a couple of times now. So wouldn't be surprised if Boston gets another hard-fought victory game four to kind of end this thing. But I do think it opens an interesting door of what you're talking about for Eastern Conference Finals MVP for the Boston Celtics, should they end this thing in four. But I think that it's all she wrote here, because I don't think we're getting Tyrese Halliburton back for game four for the Indiana Pacers.
I mean, but JBT, when you watch that game, I mean, you knew it was coming. The line, I was sitting with Berman and Bill and I watched it. That was 5.5 with 4 minutes to go. You could get the Celtics with 4 minutes to go in the third. You got 5.5. You kind of knew it was coming. I mean, why wouldn't the guy call timeout? Why wouldn't he, you know, he call a timeout to set it up? I mean, to let Nembhard get the ball stripped from him by Holiday and another meltdown. I mean, they could easily be up 2-1 in this series.
Yeah, and you can talk about a lot of the mistakes, Michael, throughout the series, right? You know, if you want to talk about that instance, you're setting your guys up to at least run a play, what you're talking about not calling a timeout if you're a Carlisle at the end of game one to advance the ball instead of inbounding it in the backcourt, all sorts of different mistakes. Actually, I thought too at the end of game one as well, Michael, when you're talking about guarding that inbounds play that Jaylen Brown eventually hits a three to tie that up, why not just have all five of your guys along the perimeter? They need a three with less than 10 seconds left to go and no timeout. So there's a lot of mistakes I think that the Indiana Pacers can really point to in this series, and at the very least think, man, we could have been in a much better position. Even given the injury to Tyrese Halliburton, we could be in a much better position right now to take care of business than we are too. So I think that they have nothing but to do is look at themselves and realize, like, this is kind of the reason why we're in here. Injuries aside, if they don't make those mistakes, Michael, you're talking about, like you said, up 2-1, and even at worst, you're down 2-1 with the chance to tie this game in game four.
Can you imagine the takes if the Celtics were down 2-1 in this series? My goodness. It would be a nervous time in Boston. We're hanging out with Jonathan Von Tobel, VSiN senior NBA analyst here on the Progressive Guest Line. Make sure you check out all of JBT's work on VSiN.com as well as VSiN Primetime, which you can check out weekdays 6 to 9 Eastern Time. Well, you alluded to it earlier, JBT, about the Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Right now, Jason Tatum is the odds-on favorite, minus 200. Jaylen Brown, plus 150. It feels like it's a two-player market. Can you make the case for Jaylen Brown at plus money?
I mean, I don't know why you wouldn't. I don't know why Jason Tatum has this massive price tag. I get he's the name, if you will, Femi. But if you look, like, I was talking about this on Friday, where if you were to score this like a boxing match, right, for Eastern Conference Finals MVP, I think Jaylen Brown was up 2-0 going into the third. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, you had game one where Jason Tatum was great in overtime. But how'd you get to overtime? It was because Jaylen Brown hit an insane three-point shot to tie a game up to bring it to an extra period. In that game, he shot well over 50%, was insanely efficient. And then in game two, when Jason Tatum absolutely no shows in the first half, Jaylen Brown has an insane game, goes absolutely nuclear, scores, 40 points? He's averaging over 30 points per game, guys, on 50% shooting in this series. He's got the big moment. He's got a massive game. I don't know why you would look at this through three games and go, yeah, Jason Tatum, minus 200. I just don't really understand that. If you're talking about who has been most valuable to the Boston Celtics up to this point, I think it's Jaylen Brown. And so I thought even too, after game two, we talked about this on Friday on Primetime. I thought at minus 110, you could make the argument there was value on Jaylen Brown to win Eastern Conference Finals MVP. And still, I mean, I get it. Jason Tatum, congrats on finally showing up in a game in which their best player was injured and didn't play, right? Like, I guess that works. But I think if you're scoring this over the course of the first three games, I think Jaylen Brown has an edge when it comes to winning Eastern Conference Finals MVP. Now, I will say, voters are somewhat simpletons, right? And so they just look at big name, big points, and tend to go in that direction. But Jaylen Brown is a name. He has been on this team he's been on every single Eastern Conference Finals team since that 6 and 8 year run, right? He has been here for a really long time. He is a valuable name to this team. And I think he can still win this award. So I am at least at the very least surprised, Femi, that we're up to minus 200 again here for Jason Tatum. I don't think he has that kind of edge.
Yeah, I mean, last night it was the first time he actually shot well from the three-point line. He's 5 for 10. I mean, that was his best night. I agree with you, JVT. I mean, look, you know, Brown seems to do all of the – he's the guy that I think becomes the problem. And look, if it wasn't for Horford last night, would they have won that game? I mean, think about it, right? Horford made some incredibly great threes. They shot well. How about we transition to tonight? I mean, what is Minnesota's answer on this drop defense the way you see it? They were great during the regular season defensively. But they have been exposed in this where they're allowing Gafford and Lively to just get dunks and shoot at 90% increments because all they're getting is dunks.
Yeah, so I think this is fascinating, Michael, right? Because on the surface, you look at it, and Dallas Mavericks only have an offense rating of about 114. So it's pretty average. Like, and it's well below average of what we know that they can do and what they've done in the past. But to your point, one of the things that has really stuck out about Minnesota defensively is their low men, if you will, have not been playing well. So the low guy is, of course, those guys that are sitting defensively in the corners. And if you're going to blitz these pick and rolls, if you're going to send two guys at Kyrie Irving or Luka Doncic, like we've seen a couple of times, well, then you as a low man have to cut this guy off, the roller. But what's happening is they're doing what the Clippers did. It's funny. I saw this is a really good way to put it. The Clippers decided to lose by, of course, allowing them to get destroyed and staying at home on the shooters. The Thunder decided to lose by collapsing on the roll men and allowing the shooters to do their job. If you're picking one of the two evils, you're picking PJ Washington and Derrick Jones Jr. to beat you from three. And granted, they both had two massive series against the Oklahoma City Thunder, but if you're talking about playing percentages, that's the way you go. And Michael, to your point, when you watch, you'll see Naz Reid just kind of fake hedge and then leave a roll man to just go get a dunk. Karl Anthony Towns will do the exact same thing. So I think it's really fascinating how they adjust. And I think it leads to something interesting. I sent this in to Elliot, and this isn't something I bet yet, but it was something I kind of threw together and was thinking about, which is over a half turnover parlay for both Derek Lively and for Daniel Gafford. Because if you're going to do that, if you're going to say, guys, we have to cut these guys off. If we're going to blitz, we're going to have to play these role men hard. Then that means that they're going to have to catch the ball and make decisions with the ball. That means they're going to be kicking out to open shooters. But that also means the chances of turnovers are going to be higher for both of those guys as well. So I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic where if Minnesota finally decides to, you know what, let's see if PJ Washington and Derrick Jones Jr. can beat us, that leads to more opportunities for turnovers. That means Lively and Gafford do have to make decisions with the ball if these low men are going to do their jobs. And I think that's like one of the most fascinating aspects of this game coming into tonight.
No, I like that a lot. I mean, you could easily see one of these guys hesitating than just traveling and not even throwing the ball to the other team and stuff like that. And that counts as a turnover as well. Real quick, side and total right now, the market has a lot of interest on the T-Wolves. Open three, we're now down to two. Total 207.5 pretty much across the board. Are you kind of agreeing with those movements from the market as well?
Yeah, and I like the math. If you can get, and I don't think it's going to get there for me, so if you wait in-game, a couple of buckets, you can get the number back up. But I took a little of Minnesota plus three here. I think this is the move. Look, we talk about them defensively. Either way, defensive efficiency-wise, they've been playing pretty well here. I think offensively, the real questions are, is Anthony Edwards going to show back up? Is he going to start to push the issue? Looked really good at the beginning of that game, right? Was getting to the free throw line, was forcing the refs to make decisions. Karl Anthony Towns as well. Like, both of these guys have matchups they can go after. They need to work through a Karl Anthony Towns more. He's got to be more effective. You can't be getting benched in crunch time for Naz Reid. Naz Reid was great offensively, but you need Karl Anthony Towns to perform. So if you get both of these guys to push the issue offensively, force these refs to get involved, get foul calls that go in their favor, these guys should be more aggressive. You should get a better performance from Minnesota offensively. And on the flip side, as we talked about, you've been playing pretty well defensively. And if you can make those small adjustments and turn that thing around, then I think you're in a pretty good spot to bounce back here. They haven't been that far off, guys. You know, we know that, right? They've only been outscored by 4 points in two games. Their net ratings are right there as well. If you can get a little bit more victories offensively in those possessions, you're going to be right there to be able to stay inside this number, potentially win this game tonight.
Real quick, Jamie,
yeah, you got to think it's got to go ahead. Go ahead.
Oh, I just want to ask about what your thoughts on the series price for a potential Dallas and Boston NBA finals right now. Dallas would be plus 210, Boston minus 255. We got about 10 seconds left.
I think initially I would look toward Dallas because I think they've been undervalued and they've been awesome. Market moved against them in these last two series and they've been fantastic. But I hope it's wrong because I've got this Timberwolves ticket to win the West that I would like to cash here, Femi.
There you go. It's a big ticket as well. Find a way to go ahead and do that. Maybe just bet Dallas money line tonight. That could be something that you do. He is Jonathan Von Tobel. Join us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Check out all his work on VSiN.com and on VSiN Primetime. JVT, good luck with all the bets, man. Be well.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it as always.
All right. We'll wrap up the show next here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Femi Abebefe, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We're so close to crowning an NBA champion. With the action heating up on the court, it's even hotter at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. New to DraftKings? Well, listen up. New customers can get a no-sweat bet up to $1,500. Just deposit at least $5, and you'll get a bonus bet back equal to your first bet if it doesn't hit. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use code VSIN. The crown is yours. Welcome back. It's the final segment of the Lombardi Line here on a Sunday. Femi Abebefe, Michael Lombardi, joining you guys on the DraftKings Network. It's been a fun show. Thank you to Jonathan Von Tobel, our VSiN senior NBA analyst, joined us in the last segment. JVT is on the T-Wolves tonight. He took the three. The market's down to two. A lot of folks interested in Minnesota. But before we give our final thoughts on that game, let's hand out our pro tip for the day. And our pro tip comes courtesy of JVT. And he said, hey, just consider some other options for the Boston Celtics. You are betting into the Eastern Conference Finals MVP market or the NBA Finals MVP market when that starts June 6th. Jaylen Brown, especially in this series against Indiana, has had probably the biggest moments in the big games throughout the series. But Jason Tatum currently is the odds-on favorite at minus 200. And I agree with that. I think both of us, Michael, agree with JVT's sentiment on that one. If they held the vote today, I feel like Jaylen Brown would win it.
He's been the most consistent player for them. There's no question. I mean, last night, Horford makes 7 3-pointers. I mean, that's 21 points there that he, you know, and he's wide open. They gave him to him, and he made the shots. And so, and Brown can get to the rim. I mean, one thing we do know is Tatum shot well last night from the 3-point line, 5 for 10, and he loaded up the stat sheet. But that's not been the consistent way. There have been some ebb and flow. It'll be interesting when Boston moves to the next series against Dallas or against Minnesota. I think it's going to be against Dallas. Then, you know, how they defend him and who defends Brown. I mean, that's the option, right? Those two good players make it challenging for everyone else, you know, really along with Holiday, who's a great defender.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens with Boston if they're able to get Porzingis back. I know that's been something that's been lingering throughout these playoffs. If they win this game, that gives them even more time to get healthy, although I'm not sure if they really need him against the Indiana Pacers, to be quite honest. But you would think that Porzingis would be back, which, how about the storylines for a potential Mavericks-Celtics series? You got Kyrie against Boston, Porzingis against Dallas. It's a pretty juicy storylines if we get Celtics-Mavs, which is the favorite outcome for the NBA Finals. I can't wait for it.
I think that would be, you know, I really think that would be the best. If the storylines would be great, but I think the two teams would be great because both teams have played really good defense, you know, especially Dallas in the second half of the season. And Luka has been, you know, obviously, you know, what Dort tried to do to him in the Oklahoma City playoff. I mean, he endured that. I mean, he was getting beat up and mugged like you couldn't believe, and he got through that. This one's been a little bit easier for him. There hasn't been the same physicality. And I think what JVT said in the last block is so true. They've got to find a way, Minnesota, to be physical. And that's not their forte, especially Karl-Anthony Towns, who plays like a 6'6 small forward at times. They got to play bigger. Now, Gobert plays big, but their team has to play bigger and has to become more physical. But we know the wear and tear of a team. It's harder to go to the rim when you're getting beat up all the time.
So what do you think happens tonight? Right now, we're currently sitting in Mavericks 2-point favorites, and there's even a shop where it's 2 -105 for Dallas. So interest even at 2 on the Minnesota Timberwolves. The total's 207.5. That's ticked down 1.5. Do you see Minnesota getting back into this series, or does Dallas extend this out to a 3-0 lead?
I think even if Minnesota wins, they're not back in the series, right? Because there's still another game in Dallas. And, you know, and I think to me that just means they get to go back to Minnesota. Barkley doesn't think they're going back. I think to me we have yet to see Dallas play their best game. I mean, think about it. They did not play their best game in the opening game and they won. Last game, they're down 18. You could not say they played their best game. And they still won that game. Now, it's got to change. And I think to me this is an in-game betting proposition because you want to see what Minnesota's adjustments are. You cannot give up almost 30 points on dunks and expect to win the game. And that's why you're shooting at an incredible percentage.
Yeah, I like the in-game angle of maybe Minnesota comes out with that flurry early on because they know that there's urgency. We're down 0-2. We got to do that. And at that point, maybe you can get a better number on the Dallas Mavericks if you're catching like 3.5, 4 points. And maybe you play it that way because I do think that we're going to get a close game tonight. These two teams have played two close games. That doesn't mean that they're going to play a third one. But I think that just the way they kind of come together, I think we'll see a close game in this in tonight's contest. Once again, game 3, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific time. I can't wait to watch this one. Dallas 2-point favorites, total 207.5 as the market continues to back the Minnesota Timberwolves. We'll see if that comes to fruition later on this evening when they tip off in the Metroplex. All right, well, 5 minutes ago, Michael, let's get back to the NFL and our Believe the Hype segment. And this is with the two Super Bowl participants from last year. The San Francisco 49ers win total at 11.5. They'll likely be favored. They will be favored probably in their first five games. They're favored in all 17 right now. Well, obviously, injuries can change things, but right now they are favored in those first 5 weeks. Home against the Jets, at the Vikings, at the Rams, home against Patriots, home against the Cardinals. Are you believing the hype on the Niners that they can get out to a good start and also long-term throughout the season as the best team in the NFC?
Well, I think initially you have to believe they are the best team, and they're going because they're going to be healthy. And with Bosa, the improvements they made, the defensive line, the simplicity of what they're trying to do defensively. And then, look, nobody wants to give Brock Purdy enough credit, but he's really a good player. And if you watch the game closely, they don't mind putting Purdy in situations that he can achieve great things in the passing game. You know, they're not managing Purdy. They're handling Purdy. And I think they'll be there at the end. That first five games, it'd be shocking if they don't win four of the first five. Mm-hmm. But one thing about San Francisco that you have to understand is they have to be able to stay healthy. You know, and they've got to improve that offensive line. Trent Williams has got to play 17 games. They've got to be – McCaffrey's got to play the role that he fits perfectly within. I'm not worried that he's not at OTA days. That's meaningless to me because he'll be there on game day. He'll be ready to go. But I do think they need Ayuk to be under contract. They need an outside receiver because they're going to pack the middle of the field. What makes Kyle's offense so challenging is because of the formations and how he moves people around. You know, when you look at some of the other teams, Houston, that copy what Kyle does, is they keep it so that they're not running as many formations. They're more static. And so you can play more man, pack the middle of the field. With Kyle, it becomes difficult. And Ayuk on the outside becomes an issue.
Yeah, this team, I mean, they're so well put together, what they've been able to do with Shanahan and Lynch constructing this roster, and it's dialed in. Like they say, that they play that basketball on grass with all the multiple versatile weapons that they have offensively. I mean, maybe at the Rams could be tricky. I mean, the Jets game, I mean, I'll say this about the Jets tricky. Week one. The Effers at least will be healthy week one, we think. So maybe that's a tough opening night.
Right. And the Effers, because of since they've acquired DJ Reed last offseason, you know, they play more man to man and they do understand how to play it. Now, Kyle also understands what Robert Saleh wants to do. And we'll see how good this Jet defensive front. I think losing Franklin Myers and losing Bryce Huff are going to hurt them. They were two of their best rushers for the Jets. Huff, you know, led their team in sacks and pressures. They just gave him away. They knew the Eagles were lurking out there, going to sign him. Everybody in the world knew it. I mean, and yet they just let that slip away for whatever reason. I think I know what it was. Woody was probably not allowing them to put the franchise tag on him for fear that, you know, somebody, they couldn't get him under contract. So I think that's got to be something, and then we'll see where they are. Look, they're going to be better, the Jets, just because of their quarterbacking.
Yeah. Well, let's get to the defending champion, Kansas City Chiefs, the two-time defending champs. 11.5 is the win total. Their first 5 weeks, home against Ravens, home against Bengals, at the Falcons, at the Chargers, home against the Saints, and then the bye week. Do you believe the hype on the Chiefs as two-time defending champs? And also, what do you think their record is after those first five games?
Well, I think they have the best player in the league, let's be clear. And he's determined to continue to achieve and do great things. But this is not the best team, right? I think there's some concerns, especially where are they without Snead at their corner situation? Can they replace him? And then we still don't know who's going to be the starting left tackle. That's a question mark, right? We don't know where that's going to end up. And that's a hole. And then we don't know the receiver room. Rashid Rice is headed for a suspension, you would think. Right? Worthy had pulled a hamstring early in camp, so he's missing time. And then Hollywood Brown is their best guy. You can't count on Kendrick Toney to be a legitimate full-time player. Much can Kelsey really impact the team at 36 years old? You know, you're hoping Kelsey can play effectively at the end of the year, not at the beginning of the year. I think this is going to be a harder year than people can imagine because I think they're going to have to run it. Remember this, Femi. Last year, during the season, Pacheco carried the ball on average 14 times a game. Playoff, he carried it 21. They decided to run the ball after Christmas Day. I think that's the same team they're going to have.
Yeah, I mean, the target is squarely on their back, but it was on their back last year as a defending champs, and they successfully defended that Super Bowl champion. But once again, no team in the Super Bowl era has ever gone three-peat in the NFL. All right, that does it for us here on the Lombardi Line. What are you eating today, Mike, before we get out of here? What's on the grill? What's the outdoor kitchen looking
like? Oh, we're going to barbecue it up. We got chicken. Lovely. We're going to have sausage and pepper sandwiches. Oh, we're going to do it right. I got Big Daddy in the house. I'll get it all to you tomorrow. Don't worry.
Tell him I said hi and tell him that the Packers are going over their win total. That does it for us
We'll see.
We'll see you guys later. The Handle with Matt Brown and Mike Somich coming up next.